Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Your voicemails, your text messages, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. Going to take all of your voicemails, all of your text messages. Wednesdays are the day we do it, and we're doing it today, taking all your voicemails and all of your text messages. Now what's going on? Happy hump day to you. We've got Wizards and Bulls tonight. We got Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis returning again. This is going to be the first of a doubleheader we've got at the back end of this season to see these guys two more times. So we're going to get into that, some quotes, and an extended piece from Jabari Parker with The Athletic talking about his time with the Bulls and just his experience over this season. So I thought there were some interesting quotes from that article. And then we're going to take Bulls fans' questions, voicemails, comments, concerns, and everything else in between. But first and foremost, how you doing? Have you cooled off? I think I've cooled off a little bit from yesterday's episode.
Yeah, what's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? It was definitely not ideal. We went through all the reasons in yesterday's show why the win over Phoenix was not in any way encouraging. They didn't win with the pieces you wanted to see them winning with, and we had some people texting us about that very concern, and especially knowing that they had a real chance to narrow that gap to the top three of the lottery to a razor thin margin. It was definitely a real sour taste in my mouth, and now it seems like maybe they are finally kind of just anchored into that four spot. We'll see. I mean, I think something drastic would have to happen for the Bulls to leapfrog Phoenix or Cleveland down the stretch of the season, and now it's just kind of seeing what we see through the final 10 games of the year. And I am curious to see what this Wizards matchup looks like tonight. We'll see about Otto. Sounds like the latest we heard from him is that he is doubtful after also missing that game on Monday. Sounds like Zach LaVine is questionable. And I'll tell you right now, would not mind to see LaVine sit tonight.
You know, that's the other thing, and I'm not going to get all wound up again like I did yesterday, but wouldn't it be nice if they would have just sat him on Monday?
On Monday? Yeah. Would have been nice.
I mean, it's not to say that it would have made a whole lot of an impact considering Robin Lopez was your leading scorer, but...
Well, hey, I mean, the Bulls won by what? 14, 15 points?
Yeah.
Zach LaVine had 17.
Yeah. So.
Do the math.
If Otto Porter and Zach LaVine don't play in this one tonight, you're going to see a lot of Bradley Beal. You're going to see a lot of Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis off the bench. You know, we kind of steered away from taking a look or at least jumping in and updating ourselves on Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker since they've departed Chicago. Matt, I know there's probably a lot of our listeners who may or may not subscribe to The Athletic. If you don't, you should. But nonetheless, Fred Katz, who covers the Washington Wizards, did a piece on talking with Jabari Parker, his time with the Chicago Bulls as he returns now playing them tonight. Had some interesting things to say about his time. I guess I would start here. What is the most interesting thing you got from this article now about a month and a half from that trade and finally the release or the freeing of Jabari and Bobby Portis?
I mean, the biggest takeaway I got from Jabari's newest comments in this Athletic piece is that he was kind of in denial about what was going on in Chicago, because he said, and I quote, "That's absolutely false," when discussing the reports and talk about him showing up to training camp out of shape. So in Jabari's mind, or maybe in his opinion is a better way to put it, he did not in fact show up out of shape. But I'm sorry, if you know, people in the building and even the Bulls staff themselves said, yeah, this guy showed up out of shape. And as fans with the eye test could see in the early going that he looked out of shape, then what's Jabari talking about? Because his defense is, and here's another quote, just look at the stats. Look at when I did my thing, when I climbed, how they just all of a sudden took me out of the rotation. And then look at when I had a point a minute when I didn't play at all. So how was I out of shape if I'm able to do those two things? Well, first of all, he never actually was averaging a point a minute. But scoring some points on the offensive end and being the scorer that the Bulls brought him here to be in no way nullifies the reality that he was out of shape. And the fact that he was out of shape was very noticeable on the defensive end when he was not doing a damn thing. So, and it goes back to the original thing that got him in hot water with the fan base and the media when he first arrived, saying nobody pays anybody to play defense in this league. And the fact that that attitude never changed. We never saw any added effort from Jabari. Everybody, remember, would go back and say, wow, look at the defense he was playing with, and look at the effort he gave on that end in that Milwaukee-Boston series last year. But we continuously saw Jabari show us nothing and give us nothing and constantly get caught dogging it back in transition, not playing any transition defense, Fred Hoiberg and Jim Boylan getting furious with him, calling timeouts after an opponent gets easy fast break points, and saying to Jabari, that's on you. So he's in denial about being out of shape, and he's in denial about the fact that people cared that maybe it was just a brief foot-and-mouth moment when he said the whole thing about defense and getting paid to play defense. But all season long, when he was in the rotation, he showed us that he doesn't give a crap about trying on that end. So, to me, a lot of what Parker said in this interview rings really hollow.
Yeah, you look at that quote, and it just says, I don't know, you can take it in a bunch of different ways, too. Like, I get it. Part of that, I understand what he's saying. You know, when he was ripped out of the rotation and benched, I can understand it. At that point, he was the Bulls' second leading scorer, right? In a stint where the Bulls' offense was one of the worst offenses in the entire NBA. The Bulls had trouble scoring from all facets. So I kind of understand where he's coming from, and I get that. But at the same time, that's not a defense for whether or not the original lead-up question is, were you or were you not in shape coming into the season. Fred Hoiberg at a point put him in the position to be there. He put him at the four instead of, you know, pigeonholing him and putting him at the three, like the Bulls originally wanted to play him and experiment him at. So I get it. When Jim Boylan took him over and took him out of the lineup and all of that, I can kind of understand it. But at the same time, dude, you didn't do it yourself any favors at the beginning of the season, especially when you had the most opportunity, when Lauri Markkanen went out, when Bobby Portis and Chris Dunn went out, and you and Zach LaVine were the only two dudes. You were the guys that needed to start the season off right, and Jabari didn't really take the opportunity to do that. Instead, it was a lot of me ball. It was a lot of what can you guys do for me instead of what can I do for the Chicago Bulls and what can I do to help this team while a lot of those young guys were out. And I think that's the message that I got more so than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and not to be too hard on Jabari, I do have a little bit of sympathy in that it was not a great fit. And as you said, they brought him in to play a position that he is not best suited to play. And so when Fred figured that out,
right,
I think it hurt Jabari in the way that he was trying to fit into his new team. And then when Boylan took over for Fred, Boylan was more concerned about the fact that Jabari was not, according to Boylan's standards, in shape and was not giving, according to Boylan, a substantial amount of effort on both ends of the floor, which is why Boylan then took him out of the rotation. So, I mean, not to just, you know, rag too hard on Jabari, and we all know how I felt about him showing up here in the first place. And some of that is not Jabari's fault, and the $20 million is not Jabari's fault, but it's the fault of the front office. But to me, it still seems like he wanted to leave after the trade with zero guilt on his name. Because this, you know, the final quote we get in this piece from The Athletic is as follows. It's up to the player to overcome all those frustrations and lack of relationship to perform. So it can be on either end. I personally can say that I have handled both of those once before. You know, in Chicago, I just didn't have the best relationship, talking about Jim Boylan, but I made sure I was there. There's no what can you say that he did wrong. When I got my opportunity, I took advantage of it because I know how much I love this game. So he's trying to absolve himself of all guilt in that comment. What can you say he did wrong? He says in his mind, the way he phrases this, he doesn't think he did anything wrong, and that when he was given an opportunity to perform with the Bulls, he did, and he went out there and did what the Bulls brought him in to do. There is some truth to that. However, I think it's a little short-sighted of Jabari to say, hey, man, the reason it didn't work in Chicago is they didn't use me the right ways. They didn't use me enough. And the stuff that was said about me and the fact that I wasn't ready and I wasn't prepared and that I was out of shape, that's all not true. Because come on. Like, yes, Jabari showed us that he could be a scorer. And at sometimes also a pretty gifted facilitator. And I thought that was one of the more underrated parts of his game when he was here, is that, you know, he could get out and run transition offense a little bit. He's pretty good making passes in transition, and he could score. But this is a two-way game, and he never once showed us on a consistent basis of even a streak of a few games or one game where he gave that effort every time down the floor. The initial criticisms about his defense were justified. His defense of those criticisms, which was to say essentially, well, yeah, I'm not great on defense, but who cares? That is the taste that was left in the mouths of all Bulls fans as he left. And for him to come back and say, yes, you know, I did what I was brought in to do, and you can't say anything about that. I mean, come on. To me, that's just like, that's a load of bull crap. What's up, Locked On Bulls listeners? This is Matt here with a word from our latest sponsor, King Wipes. King Wipes will change your life. They've changed mine. I'm not kidding. I'm not a guy who uses a lot of products and toiletries. I'm pretty simple. I got a stick of deodorant. I got 2-in-1 shampoo, conditioner. I got body wash. And I got toothpaste. That's it. I'm very simple when it comes to taking care of my body and what people call manscaping these days. But I swear, King Wipes will change your life. Wipes at a new level of clean that is just not possible with dry toilet paper. Think about it. If you spill peanut butter on the counter, do you wipe it up with a dry paper towel? Or after digging in your yard, do you come in and wipe your hands with a dry napkin before eating? Every man is the king of his castle, and that includes, that's right, that porcelain throne. Make the most of your throne time with large, luxurious wipes that are biodegradable and infused with aloe vera to keep it all soft and clean. Have you ever been stuck at the stadium, on the road, at the office, or in a dingy dive bar with nothing but receipts and $30 bills? Keeping King Wipes in your pocket can really save your butt. They're available in both a 48-count home throne pouch and individually wrapped wipes for those on-the-go moments in life. King Wipes make every flush a royal flush. And our Locked On Bulls listeners right now can visit kingwipes.com and enter Locked On 15 to save 15% on all purchases. That's kingwipes.com, Locked On 15 promo code for 15% off all your purchases. They're also available for purchase on Amazon. Remember, King Wipes are for the Duke in all of us. Your throne awaits. Go take it.
He did what he needed to do in order to get out of the situation he was in. And look, it didn't turn out the way he wanted it to. It didn't turn out the way the Bulls wanted to. And I think it started off on a weird foot, too. You know, we talked about it in length at the beginning of this season with signing him to the $20 million, the expectations that come with a lot of that money, the expectations not only with that, but being here in Chicago, being from Chicago, being a star high school athlete. All of those connections, I think, built up a lot of that expectation. And then with the injuries, too, to start the season off, then it was like, okay, now the Bulls really need to lean on Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker as your two main options. Obviously, the quote, too, from him going on the Score after the first day of his press conference and saying, they don't pay me to play defense, and we've played that clip a bunch of different times on this show in the past. I've defended that clip too, even in when he expands on that, it makes sense. Like, I get it from his standpoint. I always compare it back to Marcus Smart. Look at what Jabari got paid compared to what Marcus Smart got paid, right? Marcus Smart, really solid defender, doesn't score a whole lot. Look at his contract extension and what he got in terms of years and money compared to what Jabari got. 2 years with an option on the second year at 2 years, $40 million compared to what Marcus Smart got, I think 4 years, $52 million. Jabari's right. You don't get paid in the NBA to play defense. You just get paid in praise. So he's not wrong.
Well, yeah, but that's never what that comment was about.
I get it.
It's not about whether or not he's right. It's about the fact that who the hell would go out in his first big interview on sports talk radio in your hometown for your new team and say that?
It only avalanched after that, right? After Fred Hoiberg got fired, it only avalanched from there. Him getting benched, it seemed like the relationship him and Jim Boylan had all of a sudden completely deteriorated. And then it was Jabari had the don't care attitude for the next month or so, month and a half. And then soon enough, he was traded. And then he was out of here. So, man, I hope he can figure this out. And he finds a way to be able to find a team that he can stick with, because I still think he's got loads of talent and he's still super young, but the mentality that he's going about this, I don't know if this is the right way to go about it. I don't know.
Well, and you know, Chicago's fans and the Chicago media is not his concern anymore.
True.
And if he's just trying to say that in Washington, he's got a fresh start, his stats are up, you know, just you know, as are Bobby Portis's since joining Washington. They seem to be happy there. They seem to, appreciate being wanted. And while some Wizards fans are already souring on the, you know, essentially hollow points that those guys are providing because they are both one-way players and that was their fault when they were here, you know, if and whether or not Jabari and or Bobby are around in Washington beyond this season, there's no way in hell the Wizards are picking up Jabari's option. They might try and renegotiate something else if they decide they do want to keep him around. And if he feels like this is the fresh start he needed after a disappointing failed experiment with his hometown team, like, you know, whatever mental state he needs to be in to hopefully put that behind him and get back on track, you know, what was supposed to be a great promising NBA career that's been derailed by two ACL tears and a really unfortunate short stint with the Bulls. You know, I'm not rooting against Jabari, and hopefully he figures it out, and whatever way he wants to look back on the Bulls is his right to look back on it that way. But it's all right to call out, you know, if he says something about what he did and did not do while he was here, if we think that's BS, then we can say, hey, that's BS. But you know, whatever helps Jabari sleep at night. I don't care.
Certainly is the case. Since being traded to the Washington Wizards, Jabari Parker is averaging 27.1 minutes per game, 14.8 points on 56% shooting, which is pretty crazy, actually. He's shooting really good. He's 6 for 10 from the field. He's shooting 31.5% from three. He's averaging 7.4 rebounds per game, three assists per game, and 3.2 turnovers. He's a 2.4 plus minus in the plus minus, in the box plus minus. So certainly playing decent with the Wizards on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, this only carries one side of the stats. From what I'm reading from the Wizards fans and from beat reporters, it seems like the defense isn't carrying over either. So there's obviously two sides to the basketball floor. Quickly, just on Bobby Portis, too. I'm sure people are curious how he's played. 26.3 minutes per game, 14.6 points, 8.4 rebounds, 1.2 assists, 1.9 turnovers. He's shooting 46.7% from the field and 45.6%. And
45 from downtown, right?
Yeah, 45.6% from three on 4 3-point attempts per game. Matt, he was doing this with the Bulls too this season. He was the Bulls' second best 3-point shooter before he was dealt. So if he can
keep
that up.
He wasn't shooting 45% though.
No. But he was knocking down threes left and right. If he can keep this up, I think this is one of his main attractions this offseason as far as a free agent, is a big man that can spread it out and knock down threes at a pretty decent clip, and also that can rebound and bring some energy off the bench. I don't think it's $16 million per year, say, but I think he's going to be an attractive type free agent that's going to be middle of the road, young player that a lot of teams are going to be interested this summer.
Yeah, I think if Bobby finishes out the season as well as he has played since arriving in Washington, he's going to end up generating more interest and getting bigger offers than he would have had he stayed with the Bulls and not been traded. Because his season when he kicked off with the Bulls was just immediately derailed by injury and then another injury. And for a guy who turned down a pretty lucrative offer last summer in a contract year, was not having a good season as far as proving his worth in the league. And he's managed to turn that around a little bit and bump his stats since arriving in Washington. I think he's still not worth and is still going to come shy of getting an offer of what we heard he wanted from the Bulls last year, which was somewhere around $15 or $16 million annually over a multi-year deal. Because I don't know how many NBA teams Bobby could realistically be a starter for. I think there is a list, but it's a pretty short list. So most teams that would be looking to add Bobby would probably be looking to add him as a depth piece to their rotation, and there aren't a whole lot of teams trying to spend that kind of money on a bench player. So I think at a low point before being traded and with both of those injuries and having a pretty rough year, Bobby was looking at making a veteran's mid-level kind of offer that would have not even been close to the offer the Bulls gave him a year ago when he hit free agency this summer. He may have played his way up from that a little bit, but I still think it's going to be shy of what he essentially was looking for when he turned down the Bulls offer a year ago.
Yeah, I think you're right too. But like you had said, I think you mentioned this before, but 40% of players in the NBA are going to be either on a restricted or unrestricted free agency level this summer. Seems like a lot of teams are going to have money to spend. I would assume Bobby is going to have a lot of interest this summer. And I would assume, too, Washington, between Jabari and Bobby, they're going to make a decision on one of these guys to bring either one of them back. So if Bobby doesn't end up going back to Washington, I would assume a handful of teams are going to be interested. So if it's not exactly the money that he's looking for, maybe it's security and being able to go to a place where he can stay long term. So interesting thought. But yeah, Bobby Portis with the Bulls in 22 games, he was averaging 14.1 points, shooting 45% from the field, 37.5% from three on 3.3 attempts. 7.3 rebounds, 1.3 assists. So he's been crazy good from three since he went to Washington off the bench. So there's that. So yeah, shout out to Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker for upping their offense and at least showcasing themselves a little bit heading into free agency this summer. So we'll see if they'll do that again tonight. Before we get to your text messages and voicemails, you do that at 331-979-1369. Did you know you can fill out a tourney bracket at DraftKings this year? That's right, DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, is a totally free bracket with tens of thousands of dollars up for grabs. Everyone's filling out a bracket during the tourney. Might as well do it on an award-winning app with tons of free prizes. For the first time ever, DraftKings is offering a bracket battle promotion with $64,000 in prizes. Matt, I was checking out the app last night on DraftKings, and I was messing around just trying to do one of the several brackets I was going to do this week, and I ended up with a Final Four, and this is going to be one of a few Final Four teams that I'm going to have, but I ended up with Duke, I ended up with Texas Tech, I ended up with Tennessee, and then I ended up with North Carolina in my Final Four. So a little bit of a different Final Four than I think a lot of people have, but just looking at some of the stats, looking at some of the odds makers, and I'm a huge proponent of looking at bookmakers and how they're scaling out the NCAA tournament. And long story short, this tournament is stacking up to look at a lot of the favorites winning in this one. So I'll give you a little bit of that key for all the people that are listening and want to go fill out DraftKings bracket battle. But the reason why I picked Texas Tech is out of the any of those seeds at the number one or the number two, Texas Tech out of those two seeds that is not a number one or number two has the most has the highest chance, highest probability of winning the national championship this year. So to beat the odds, I figured I would go a little bit off the curve and pick them to end up in the Final Four. And looking at their bracket with Jarrett Culver, I decided to put them in the Final Four. So if you want to be a part of the action at DraftKings, you know how brackets work. Before tip-off of the first game of the tournament, just pick the winner of every game every round. That's all there is to it. And the best part is you can play for free with the code DRIBBLE. That's the code DRIBBLE. You can even set up a private group for you and your friends and compete for bragging rights. Download the DraftKings app or head to DraftKings.com now. Use the code DRIBBLE to enter the bracket battle promotion for free and compete for a share of $64,000. That's the code DRIBBLE to enter the bracket battle for free. Only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Make sure you get these brackets in before tip-off on Thursday. So you got less than 24 hours for the first game that starts tomorrow. So get those brackets in using the code DRIBBLE.
Jordan was just saying the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year right around the corner. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his Duke teammates cement their legacy with a title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a 16 seed last year, and can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you think you know the answers, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. That sounds like you, Jordan. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is, speaking of that customer service, they pay out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours fast. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash in. Deposit with MyBookie today with promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid.
So NCAA tournament starts. Well, it officially started yesterday with the two play-in games, but it continues along tonight. So if you're going to be flipping between Bulls and Wizards and the play-in games that are going to happen between St. John's and Arizona State, and also the 16 seeds that are going to go on tonight as well, should be interesting. The Arizona State-St. John's game might be of some interest to some Bulls fans out there Lu Dort from Arizona State might be one to watch, a prospect that is on one of my lists of watching. He might be out of the reach for the Bulls in the second round, but a guy to watch for Bulls fans. Shamori Ponds, too, a point guard that is looking like he might go in the mid-30s in the NBA draft. So somebody else on St. John's that Bulls fans should definitely be watching. So flip between those two games, the Bulls and the Wizards, and that play-in game tonight. So just a shout-out to the NCAA tournament. Matt, unfortunately, I had the displeasure of watching my Indiana Hoosiers open up the NIT tournament, the No One Is Tuning In tournament yesterday, where they hosted as a number one seed. And Romeo Langford did not play. So, yeah, that was really exciting to watch.
Tough year for your Hoosiers, buddy.
It's been a tough decade for my Hoosiers. Let's just put it that way.
That too.
But yeah, let's get on to our text and voicemail line. 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up. Thank you, everyone, for dropping us voicemails, text messages. You guys continue to do this all season long, and we so much very appreciate everyone who does it, everyone who drops us voicemails. Continue to do that. We will get to everybody's voicemails that continue to drop those. So do that whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, watching the game, throughout the games, post-game, wherever you are. Feel free to hit us up at any time of the day, 331-979-1369. Matt, let's start right off the top. The latest text message that we just got in, it looks like Coby White is projected as the second point guard in this draft, assuming the Bulls are not in the top two and that Ja Morant is taken number two. At what position would you be willing to draft Coby White? This is from the 919. So tournament time coming up is going to be an opportunity for a lot of Bulls fans who haven't checked in on the NCAA at all to get a dose of a lot of these prospects. I'd be willing to debate this because Darius Garland is somebody that is getting a lot, is or is not getting a lot of mention. Not getting a lot of mention because he's hurt and he hasn't played in nearly 3 months. He would be the second point guard on this list, I think, even over Coby White. What do you think overall if the Bulls lose out on Ja Morant? I don't think if they especially land at number four, I don't think they're going to be reaching on a point guard, but maybe I'm wrong on this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what their strategy is and how desperately they want to add a point guard in this draft or how much they just want to add a top talent. Because even though there is a pretty big drop-off after Zion Williamson, and I know that the Bulls do also have considerable interest in Ja Morant just on the number of times we have seen Paxson and or Gar Forman scouting Murray State games this season. If, as this texture says, you know, the Bulls find themselves outside of the top three and Ja Morant is off the board, how much would they prioritize adding a point guard from this draft class? I don't think that they would reach. I would agree with you that I think just because of his situation, Garland has gotten kind of overlooked. A lot of mock drafts have him in like the mid to late teens right now, which I think he would be a good value for if that is where he slid. And as far as Coby White, you know, he's really vaulted up a lot of draft boards recently just because UNC's played some pretty notable games. You know, they did lose in dramatic fashion to Duke in their in their conference tourney, but you know, they also had two wins over Duke earlier this season, and White had some pretty strong performances and even played pretty well in their recent loss to Duke in their conference tournament. So I think because of that, he started to get a little bit more attention, and maybe also because Nasir Little has been kind of a disappointment for UNC all season long based on where he projected to go coming into the earliest 2019 NBA mock drafts. So I think those two factors kind of have Coby White vaulted higher right now as far as the top point guards in this draft class. But if I'm the Bulls, I'm not reaching for a point guard because I don't think any of them are that level of, like, none of them really have that franchise changing kind of potential. They have individual strengths and weaknesses that I think, you know, we could talk about those, what they are. I'm with you. I think I might give a slight edge to Darius Garland over Cody White at this point. Interested to see, you know, what happens in the tourney itself, and you know who might maybe increase or decrease their draft stock there, which we see happen every year. If I'm the Bulls, though, and I lose out on John Morant and I'm picking somewhere, you know, 3 through 7 or 8, I'm taking best available. And I know it's a wing-heavy draft, and the Bulls, you know, they have Otto. They are still trying to figure out whether or not Denzel fits into this future. They have Chandler Hutchison, who we saw small glimpses of this season. But I still – like. And the other thing that you could theoretically do to say, all right, well, we don't love any of these wings all that much. Somebody wants to trade up and take one of these wings. We'll trade down and either take White or you know, Garland or, you know, some point guard down in the teens and add ourselves an asset that way. I wouldn't disagree with the logic in that, but I don't think that's something I would expect to see the Bulls do. I don't think the Bulls are going to trade down.
That was going to be my next question to ask you, was, you know, playing the idea of if the Bulls stay at 4 or even move up into the top 3 and John Morant and Zion Williamson are off the board, you're still playing with the factor of, do you take RJ Barrett? Do you lean on his skills and the idea that you can develop him into a potential borderline all-star wing? Or are you looking at him becoming the next Andrew Wiggins? And I mean, Andrew Wiggins is a nice player, but he's not a guy that's going to take you to a championship. He's not a franchise changer, right? So that might be an opportunity where if Atlanta's, let's say for just a hypothetical theory here, let's say Atlanta's picks end up going 5 and 8, or Atlanta's end up 6 and 10. Maybe that's a situation where you call them up and say, would you want to move down? Like, would we want to swap? And we'll move down and you guys move up and we'll take your 2 picks. Or you look at another team around the league and see, can we move down and acquire a couple assets, and then we can go and take Darius Garland at maybe 7 or 8, and then you get a couple other assets too. So that might be on the Bulls' mind if they do in fact lose out on guys like Zion Williamson and Ja Morant. So there's an idea playing out too. There's going to be a lot of possibilities here that'll play out in the next couple of months. Another thing to factor in too is the Bulls, that second round pick, there's going to be a couple point guards in that second round. While they're going to be more flyers than anything else, I think there are interesting names there. And even beyond just the second round, guys that they can invite to Summer League that they can test out to. Shamori Ponds, who I just mentioned, from St. John's. Carson Edwards, who hasn't played all that great over the last month and a half from Purdue, but he still was nominated as a potential AP Player of the Year at the beginning of the year. There's a couple names in that early second round that might be of interest if the Bulls go with a wing early on, and maybe they take a flyer on a point guard in that second round. So, yeah, I do like Kobe White, though. I think rising up the draft board, he definitely deserves it at UNC, so we'll just have to find out. I do like Darius Garland a lot, though, even despite the injuries. Everything that I've read on him, all the tape that I've watched on him, dude is going to be good. As soon as he gets healthy, he's going to be really, really good. I think people are underrating him. It's just a matter of, can he stay healthy? And it's just going to take some time to develop him.
Yeah. And, you know, meanwhile, Cody White is shown a lot of impressive athleticism in some of his recent performances. In their, you know, third and final game of the regular season against Duke, or, you know, not regular season, but in their conference tourney, he had some of the most impressive acrobatic finishes at the rim that I have seen from any college player this season. Like, that kid is special. He definitely has some upside. And he doesn't right now have the injury concerns that are attached to Garland.
One other name that I did leave out, and this is going to be probably the most exciting first round matchup you will see on Thursday or Friday in the NCAA tournament, and a lot of people have been talking about this, is Marquette versus Murray State. It's going to be the Ja Morant versus Marcus Howard matchup, point guard from Marquette versus point guard versus Murray State.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are projecting him to go anywhere between the back end of the 30s to the early 40s. So that's another guy to keep your eye on, too, with the Bulls having that Memphis pick. So,
and I see a good upset potential there for Murray State, because you know Marcus Howard is NBA draft bound, but he's been kind of banged up recently. Marquette has not played well down the stretch entering the tournament, and Ja Morant's the wild card. I think on paper this Marquette team is better than Murray State, but they haven't been playing well recently, and their guy Howard is not in the best shape right now. So I'm excited to watch that game.
Let's grab a voicemail here.
Hi guys, I was just wondering, I'm watching Get Up and I'm watching all the shows, and they're basically saying Zion Williamson is can't miss TV no matter what time of day he's playing. And it just made me think about the NBA draft, and I thought, is it pretty much the fix is in already for Zion to go to New York, since that's the media capital of the world? Let me know what you guys think, but I think it's for sure, no matter what goes on, he's going to New York this summer. I would love for him to go to the Bulls, but, as Bulls fans, we never get that lucky. So, all right, thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call. This is interesting, Matt. And, the one thing that I do love about this season, and it makes me laugh more than anything else, is anytime any big media outlet posts about Zion Williamson, immediately the comments on Twitter or on Facebook or anything, or on Instagram, is just people... The comments are just all about, people are just having, it's almost like people are tired of hearing or seeing Zion news, and partly that's just because media outlets just 24/7 talk about him. And, I can understand it. This is how I felt about Trae Young last year, though, Matt. With Zion now, it's 100 times more coverage than Trae Young got last year. But to this caller's point, I don't know about the fix, and I don't know about the lottery. This lottery system is completely new, so we don't know how this is going to go this year. Teams could go all over the place this year. This is completely new, so nobody knows how this is going to go. What do you think, though, in terms of where Zion lands? The top five teams: New York, Phoenix, Cleveland, Chicago, Atlanta. Looking at those five teams, the cities, where Zion goes, how he would be marketed for the NBA in terms of their standpoint, where they would want him to go. It makes sense. They want him to go to New York or Chicago. Those are the two biggest markets, two teams that have been suffering for a long time, need a big star to market. It would make sense to go to New York or Chicago, and the NBA would really want those two teams to have him, as opposed to Phoenix, Cleveland, or Atlanta.
Well, yeah, and let's also not completely rule out the Lakers, who are lottery bound with very small odds, and it would be a very conspiracy theory raising, very curious thing if the Lakers somehow won the lottery from where they are, to get them, a Zion LeBron tandem going on. Whereas, if the Knicks win the lottery, it'll be harder to say, oh, the fix is in. The league wants Zion to go to the biggest market team because they desperately need a marketable player. And, they had tied for the best odds. So as far as, what the league wants, of course the league wants Zion to end up in New York, LA, or Chicago. And of those three, I would say that what they really want is him to go to New York, because that team, especially after, trading away Kristaps, are just kind of aimless right now. And for as much grief as the Bulls fan base gives this organization for being aimless, the Knicks are, they definitely are swinging for the fences in free agency this summer. And it seems like James Dolan at least believes that he knows something that nobody else knows, in that either Kevin Durant and or Kyrie Irving are ready to commit to the Knicks this summer. And so that to me is why I would be really upset. If that happens and they get Zion, I'm going to be like, well, damn it. The Knicks don't need all of that. Right? Because even if they get one of those star players, Kyrie or Kevin, the Knicks all of a sudden become more relevant. They might not suddenly become a real contender in the East, but they become relevant. And you don't need to add Zion on top of that. And I'll tell you, man, my boy Big Dave on Bulls Outsiders, he is repeatedly saying this to me all day, every day. He truly believes that the Knicks are going to be the team that ends up winning the lottery and getting Zion Williamson. And I have to repeatedly tell him to shut his mouth because I don't want to hear that crap because I, as you know, am still very much so keeping hope. And, you know, this caller who said, you know, I'd love to get Zion, but let's be real, you know, like the Bulls never get lucky. Well, they don't never get lucky. They got real lucky in 2008 when they got Derrick Rose. They got very lucky, defied the smallest of odds. And the Bulls, whether it's 14% or whether it's 12.5%, they're going to have better odds at Zion this time around. And I hate the conspiracy theory stuff and the fix for the lottery. But I tell you what, the one team that I would be most disappointed if they win the lottery and get Zion, Cleveland.
Yep, me
too.
That
team has had enough number ones in and out of the years of LeBron, LeBron leaving, LeBron coming back, LeBron leaving again. They do not need a number one pick, and nobody cares if the Cavs are relevant. So it would hurt if Zion goes to the Lakers. It would really ruffle my feathers if he somehow, you know, if he somehow goes to the Lakers because they win a crazy small odd lottery. It would also kind of disappoint me if he ends up going to the Knicks because I hate the Knicks and they don't deserve to be rewarded because James Dolan is a flipping idiot. But at least it would be Zion in a big market where he needs to be for this league.
There's legitimately a case for all five teams though in this bottom five in the lottery of why Zion would help all five of these teams. And not just from a basketball standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, right? Why the NBA needs him to go to one of these teams. New York, like you said, makes sense. They've been in turmoil forever. Clear cut. Phoenix, you know, they've had a battle for a long time, not wanting to build a new stadium, talking about maybe moving. Like,
I don't want him to go to Phoenix either.
Me either.
That would be almost as bad as him going to Cleveland.
You know, and so you think about that, too, is like if the Suns are going to stay in Phoenix, and while there isn't huge talks about that, but still there's concerns, you know, about building a new stadium and what they're going to do to attract people. Like, the Bulls just played there, and how many people were in that stadium watching the Suns play? Not too many. You know, they were lucky to maybe have 5,000 people there the other night, so... like you said, I don't want to see Cleveland. Come on now. Like, how many number one picks has Cleveland had over the last 10 years? And they made terrible decisions with that. And they also got really lucky. They got Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. So their luck, they've had enough luck for the last couple of decades. I think they're good on that. The Bulls, obviously, we don't need to explain that. But also, too, Atlanta. Like, they're an up-and-coming team. They just built and rebranded, and they're an up-and-coming sports city. It's right timing. It makes sense.
And, you know, pairing Zion with John Collins and Trae Young would be pretty exciting.
That's good for the league.
As just a fan of the NBA, Atlanta's a fairly big market. It is, you know, definitely a city that loves its basketball, and they, you know, they've developed some excitement with this, you know, this young duo that they have going right now. And if Zion went there, you know, that would be one that I would be interested to see how that young Atlanta team, you know, rises to relevance in the Eastern Conference. And I'd be okay with that. That wouldn't bother me as much, you know, because it's just kind of weird talking about, like, which if the Bulls don't get Zion, which teams would you be okay or not okay with him going to? But I, you know, as much as I know it would be good for the league, I would hate to see James Dolan be rewarded with Zion Williamson.
Just like I said, going back to my main point about this is we have no idea the way that the lottery is going to shake out. And I think a lot of people that still are going to check in on the NBA lottery and not really understand the odds for the first time and see how many teams are going to shift and where things are going to fall, I think we're going to get a fresh perspective when that lottery hits on May 14th and see where teams end up falling or laying out. think that's where we're really going to see how this lottery affects an entire season and what teams really do. Until we get to that point, though, we don't really truly understand how this lottery affects teams and what they do and what their strategy is going forward. We get it partially right now, just looking at odds. But until it all plays out for the first year, we don't truly understand all of it and all the implications that go behind it. So thanks for the voicemail. We appreciate it. Thanks for giving us the call. That's an interesting question. Matt, let's finish up with a couple more questions from our text line. You can drop those at 331-979-1369. Bigger weakness, bench or starting point guard? Obviously, both need to be addressed, but to shore up the bench, would you use the vast majority of our cap space to sign a veteran score, someone like Boogie Cousins, J.J. Redick, Wes Matthews, or hell, even Nikola Mirotic? This from the 630. Matt, honestly, it goes back to, again, where the Bulls end up in the draft, what they're going to do there. If they end up with Ja Morant, I think your starting point guard position is locked in, although I think then you focus mainly on your bench. Nikola Mirotic is an interesting one. I've seen him pop up on a lot of other people's list of potential free agent targets. And while he's been lower on lists, people have talked about him maybe be in negotiations of coming back. But to me, it seems like Nico wouldn't want to come off the bench. Like, to me, he seems like he could start in a lot of other places. So what would you want to do, though? If the Bulls don't get Ja and they're going to draft another wing, where do you want to spend most of the money this summer? Do you want to supplement it with the bench, or do you really want to attack and spend a lot of money on the point guard position this summer?
I think if they don't get Ja, then absolutely the priority has to be a point guard in free agency, and spending more money than, say, if they do get Ja but still want to add some kind of veteran depth and take one of the cheaper veteran options at the point guard spot, as opposed to, you know, if they are, you know, and some of this has to do with whether or not they look for, you know, trade options and possibilities for Chris Dunn. So essentially, you know, talk about starting over completely at the point guard spot, that maybe they look to do both. But if they, especially if they don't get Ja, I would like them to spend a considerable amount, and, you know, not all of, but certainly a majority of their free cap space on maybe one of the more, on chasing one of the more elite second tier point guards that exist in this free agent class, like, say, you know, like a Brogdon, or, you know, a lot of people talk about Pat Bev, who, you know, I don't think is going to be immensely expensive this summer, but he won't be cheap. So, you know, that to me, like you said, it depends on the draft and how the draft shakes out. If they get Ja Morant, take yourself a cheap veteran option at the point guard spot. If they don't get Ja, I would like them to make that their priority, their top priority. And we know the bench is weak, and that needs to be addressed. Some of the bench might get a little bit more well-rounded next season, assuming Denzel is healthy and sticks around. Chandler Hutchinson comes back. You know, Wendell Carter's going to be back, so that adds some more depth, you know, to the roster and rotation as a whole. We'll see what happens with Rolo as far as front court depth. But to me, like, it's simple watching this team. Point guard, point guard, point guard. It's they have to address it. They have to.
Agreed with you on that. It's as simple as that. And then the other thing, too, you just had mentioned it. Don't judge the bench on what you see right now, because you're missing three main pieces. You're missing Carter, you're missing Hutchison, and you're missing Valentine. Those three guys will axe out three guys that you're seeing on that bench unit. Like you said, point guard, I think, is the main focus here. Even if you do draft Ja Morant or Darius Garland or Kobe White, still, I think the Bulls need to use their cap space to bring in a vet. Even if it's a stopgap vet, and the Bulls are still not sure about what they want to do there, and they're drafting a young guy and they want to develop him, that's fine too. Or they miss and they don't get Ja. maybe you do sign a one-year deal for a guy, and it's stopgap until you free up some money to maybe chase a star or you trade for one. So yeah, that would be just my one concern about the point guard position, is going all in on a guy that maybe is 25 to 27, signing him to a four-year deal that exceeds $15 million, $12 to $15 million a year, and might not live up to the expectations to fill that role. I hope they don't do that. I don't think that they will do that. But we've seen crazier things happen. So, yeah, that's where I would be at. Boogie Cousins, absolutely not. He's been playing not very well for the Warriors.
Ooh, man. Have you looked at the Warriors' net rating numbers with him on and off the floor?
They had to sign Andrew Bogut.
Poopy.
They had to sign Andrew Bogut. Yeah. Oh, God. J.J. Redick, nice player. I don't think he's coming here. Wes Matthews, no thanks. Mirotić. All I would say is keep an eye on him, because I don't think he's completely out of the discussion. That's what I would say on him. I've heard his name a couple times.
There'd have to be some mutual repairing of bridges. You know, obviously Bobby's no longer here, which was the big thing that, you know, Nico essentially was like, yo, dude, trade me or trade this guy. Somebody's got to go. But even still, Nico's probably still feeling a little burnt about the fact that when that fight happened and Bobby's the one who threw the punch, they didn't necessarily side with Bobby, but they definitely didn't condemn his actions as aggressively as you might have expected, to say that Nico was also at fault for the altercation.
Yeah, that too. So,
I think that bothered Nico. And I think your previous point about Nico wanting to start was also a good one. And assuming we have Markkanen and Otto, and you know who knows as far as what happens with the draft, but do you see Nico fitting into this Bulls starting lineup? Do you see the Bulls spending the money on Nico that he is going to want to be earning this summer? I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either. And it'd be weird. Like, the Bulls would have to go in a different type of system where, I mean, if you're going to sign him as being your sixth man off the bench or something like that, and you're going to be willing to push Markkanen into a guy that's going to be like shifting between the four and the five, like, you just have to go through all these crazy schemes to make it fit and make it work and allow Mirotić to still get his minutes like a starter, even though he's not really starting. It's just, it's a lot. I still think he can start in this league, and he's shown that. So, I don't know. I wouldn't leave him off the list, though. I still think there might be interest. But like you said, I think there's going to have to be some repairing of relationships, definitely.
All right, let's take another text before we get out of here. This one definitely piqued my curiosity, Jordan, just because I hadn't really thought about it in depth. And I think it's a fair question, but I also think that this person is a little crazy. So this comes from the 773. We all know Zion is going to be a freak ages 20 to 25, those seasons of his career. But what happens when, not if, he loses that athleticism as he fills out and matures into his fully matured male body? Just look at LeBron now versus ages 18 to 28 LeBron. He plays a completely different style now since he's no longer in his physical prime. Yeah, he scores, but it's not the same as 2007 LeBron. LeBron was once a freak, but no longer. My point is, how would Charles Barkley do in today's game in his 30s? Zion is a pup now compared to what he'll be in 5 to 10 years. His whole game revolves around his athleticism. Just like MVP Derrick Rose, he lost that athleticism, and look how that ended. I'll let you touch on this in a second, Jordan. It's an interesting point because we have heard a lot of people talk about how Zion and his frame will translate to the NBA level, and maybe he's a little too heavy. Maybe he needs to get down to a lower playing weight. And I think that's kind of what this person's talking about with his frame and what happens when the athleticism goes away. My immediate response would be, dude, stop worrying about 30-year-old Zion and enjoy 19-year-old Zion.
That's where I'm at.
Like, don't let that prevent you from drafting this kid. Are you crazy?
I think it's a matter of buy. It's a thing of, you're seeing Zion so much and you're seeing highlights and all, and people talk about him 24/7, that you start to get to this shift of you like him, you're excited about him, you all of a sudden love him, and then all of a sudden people start to turn on him and start to think about all the negatives about him, and then you start to to question, and you wonder about the negatives. And this isn't just this texter. It happens in a lot of different things in sports. You know, I go back a few years with the rise of Steph Curry. This happened with him too in a certain element. It's like everybody wanted to start critiquing him when he was at the absolute peak and he was destroying and there was nothing to really criticize his game about. And I was like sitting there and I was like, yo, let's just sit back and enjoy this. This is unbelievable. So I think this is just part in seeing the coverage of Zion every single day. I'm with you. Just sit back and enjoy this. And until something actually does happen, that's when I think we should panic and freak out about it. I get it. The weight thing, but the dude is just massive. He's just a big dude. That's just how he is. But for being that size, watch how he glides on a basketball floor. I've never seen a dude that big be able to move the way he can.
Yeah.
So effortlessly. He moves like he's a 6 foot, 185 pound point guard. Some of the moves that he has. It's unbelievable. So I really wouldn't be that concerned about it.
Yeah. Also, you know, just because that's the example you brought up and aging and maybe sharing a kind of physical frame to Charles Barkley, and but like, what about when he's that player but 30 years old? Age 30, Charles Barkley for the Phoenix Suns, 22-11. Age 31, Charles Barkley for the Phoenix Suns, 23-11. Age 32, Charles Barkley for the Phoenix Suns, 23-11. 96-97 at age 33 when he went to Houston, 19-13.5. 15-11.7 at age 30. At age 34, at age 35, 16-12, at age 36, 14-10. Yeah, I wouldn't complain about that if I were you.
Here's one last thing I will say on this. Think about the way, and go back and look at some pictures of the way that Giannis's body transformed in 3 or 4 years, the way that LeBron's body transformed in 5 years in the NBA with all the training, the medical staff, everything he was able to do. Look at the way Markkanen's body's transformed in just 2 years. I can guarantee you Zion, 3 years from now, when he gets under medical training staff every single day in the NBA, he is going to look different and he is going to be even better. The dude has the work ethic too. Listen, hear him talk, see the way he plays, and listen to the way he wants to compete. He doesn't have that type of attitude that seems like once I get paid and once I get the stardom and all of this coverage that I'm just gonna kick back and play it off of just all of my ability and not work for it. So that to me says a lot, because I think once he gets to the NBA and has all of these tools at his hands, I'm really excited to see 3 years from now the way he looks and what he's doing on the floor, because I think it's going to only get better from here. So, Matt, I'm honestly, I don't know how to describe it, but I think the way that Giannis looked his rookie year compared to now, I don't know how to think about it, but I can only imagine the way Zion is going to look 3 years from now and how strong he's going to be and how fast and how quick and the way he's going to be able to move on an NBA floor 3 years from now if he puts in the work that some of these other dudes in the NBA do.
Well, yeah, and that's essentially, you know, the crux of it. If Zion, as you said, with his work ethic, figures out how to develop and evolve his game as he ages, which, you know, Derrick Rose has spent time doing since he lost his athleticism. LeBron James has adapted his game as he's aged. Kobe Bryant did it magnificently in the same way that Michael Jordan did, because Kobe essentially copied what MJ did, evolving his offensive game and where he was scoring on the floor as he was losing some of his youthful athleticism. It happens. It's about whether or not the player puts in the time to evolve their game to allow them to still play at an elite level even without being able to jump out of the gym. To worry about Zion not being as athletic at age 30 as he is at age 20 is ridiculous, because, of course, that's how human bodies work. Just ask the Sunday version of me after celebrating my birthday and St. Patrick's Day on Saturday. Human bodies change that way as you age. It is a cruel mistress of reality, but that's the truth.
Get my man Zion a good-ass shoe deal, too, and make sure that those shoes don't come and deteriorate over time, too.
Yeah, for real.
That would be the only thing that I would say. Yeah, I would say don't worry. It's something not to worry about because it hasn't come up yet. So until we get to that point,
it's a fair point to bring up, because I think a lot of people are talking about Zion's build and how that might change his NBA game as he, you know, ages. So I totally get where the question comes from. But to me, it's like, you know, enjoy the version of Zion we have now. When it was 2003 and we were seeing a teenage LeBron James jumping through gyms, enjoy that. Don't worry about what happens when LeBron's 34 or 35. That's where we are now, and now is the time to deal with that.
The same way that skinny guys can build up and build up mass is the same way that big dudes can drop weights and become leaner. So there's two sides to the spectrum. I think it's all about work ethic, and they have every tool at their fingertips. And it's just about work ethic, I think. And it's about how badly do you want it? And how badly do you want to be one of the best players in the world? And I think Zion is every characteristic in the world screams this dude wants to be one of the greatest. So I'm not worried about it. The only thing is, knock on wood, is it would be an injury risk. And that, to me, it hasn't happened yet, so I wouldn't be worried about it until it does. The NBA gods, come on. You guys have smitened us as a fan base for long enough. Have we suffered long enough since the MJ days? Like, can they help us out at all? Us Bulls fans, like, seriously? Can we get a little bit of luck, please?
Well, first things first, let's go back in time and lose that game to Phoenix.
Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We have a ton of questions in our text and voicemail line about the NBA draft, about draft prospects, about who and what, specific prospects. So I think tomorrow, with the tournament kicking off the very first day, round of 64 going on, I think this is the real opportunity for Matt and I to kind of dive into this more so. Matt and I will look at some prospects, maybe from a Bulls lens, specifically about who you should be looking at, what you should be looking at, some prospects that we like, not just necessarily at the top of the lottery, but also in the second round, too, and guys that you guys should be keeping an eye on. So we'll do that. We'll take all of the text messages and voicemails, too, that are associated with NBA draft, with players of that sort, because we have a ton of them still. So we'll address all of those. So if you want to drop any of those questions from now until tomorrow's episode, you can hit us up at 331-979-1369. If you want to react about Bulls and Wizards tonight, you can do that, too, at our text and voicemail line. Whenever you listen to the show, wherever you listen to the show, 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear you on social media as well, on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app, on the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Enjoy Bulls and Wizards tonight. Be back tomorrow. March Madness starts. We are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.